Fruit of Islam. What was the fruit of Islam to do? We were to attend the FOI classes, the Fruit of Islam classes, and learn the teachings of Mr. Farad, that Mr. Farad gave the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And we were to take care of the chores for the Nation of Islam, especially for the property, the temple property. Temple property, when called mosque, Muslims' holy places are called the mosque, not temple. But this man called our holy place, the Wisha, temple. And that remained the name until after the mid-50s. Then the name came mosque. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad went back to the name temple in the late 60s. He went back to the name temple. And finally we came back to the name mosque. Yes, so this man had drills for the Fruit of Islam. I remember joining the Fruit of Islam as a junior fruit, and I was so proud to join and to drill. And the drill leader, he would say, line up, get in line, brothers. And we would line up, and he would say, attention! And we would come to attention. You had to, you want to hear your heels click. We'd come to attention. And then he would start giving us commands. And usually the command he gave us from attention was, my time, march. So look, listen, we're interpreting now. We're just not taking these words as they are. We're trying to see what this man is saying here. He's trying to reach our souls. He's trying to change our psychology. He's trying to discipline not only our physical bodies, but he's disciplining our minds, and he's disciplining our spirits. And he says, part time, march. So attention first. He wants to get our attention first. After he gets our attention, then he can give us a command. To go forward, march. And usually the drill leader, he didn't say forward march. He said march time. Actually, it's mock. Mock means to imitate something, right? Mock time. Mock means to imitate something, and mock means actually to make something ridiculous. You mock that thing. You make it, you show the ridiculousness in it, or you treat it as though it's ridiculous to mock it. So mock time. He said, he would say march, he said, attention, attention. Then he would say, mock time. Then he'd say, march. Mock time, march. All right. So here is a man, he's saying that first, you have to get the attention of these people. If you get their attention, then you can give them a command to go forward. But first, they have to just stand in one place, mark time. They won't go forward right away. And that's what we did. From 1931 to 1945, all we did was mark time. One place, marking time. Just marking time. Held spellbound by his strange teachings, reading it, reciting it. We had to learn it by heart, like it was a midnight prayer or something, or before you go to bed prayer, or catechism or something. We had to learn it by heart. We learned all the things by heart. I memorized. I could recite a lot of it to you right now. I haven't forgot it. We memorized it. My mother gave it to me. She said, before you learn how to talk, I was reading it to you, reciting those things to you, so you would learn them by heart. We were told to learn all those things by heart. So we were a kind of a in-house, closed house, secret, kind of a secret society, really taking pride, in the fact that we had a knowledge of the world that nobody else had, that a stranger had given us a superior knowledge, a knowledge nobody else had. So though we didn't perhaps qualify to passed the high school test for the high school diploma, We were attending a school that was called the University of Islam. And the University of Islam was actually an elementary school. It was elementary school. Finally, we, after 20 years or so, we got a high school. But our school was elementary school, and it was called University of Islam. So if youngsters ask us, what school you go to? They say, what school you go to? That's the youngsters say, Christians say, Betsy Ross. I go to Betsy Ross. What school do you go to? I say, I go to University of Islam. University of Islam. And perhaps that child was in the sixth grade, and I was in the fifth grade, elementary school, you see. But he's going to Betsy Ross Elementary, and I'm going to the University of Islam. to give you a sense of superiority, to give you a sense of superiority. That's what he was doing. He was giving us a false sense of superiority. And really, that's all the races had. Races had no different, nothing any different. Every racist, if you got a sense of superiority, your sense of superiority is a false sense of superiority. So he just gave the blacks a false sense of superiority. To counter that, yes. it's getting back to the march. So the whole idea was to hold us, create something so fascinating, a language so fascinating and so pleasing to blacks, to the soul of blacks that have been put down by the white world, so pleasing that it would just hold us and we wouldn't question it. We wouldn't question it. We wouldn't want to differ with it. It worked. The change came when Honorable Elijah Muhammad went to prison. He went to prison in around 1941 for refusing the draft. He wouldn't even accept to take out a draft card. Many of his followers that went to jail with him, the men, they were too old to be inducted. But they followed their leader. They didn't accept the draft card. So they were put in jail for a 3-year term. Most of them got 3 years. 3 years term in the penitentiary. My father, because he was the leader, he got 5 years. And I know of only one person to my knowledge that got 5 years with him, and that was my brother, the oldest of us. And he got 5 years because he didn't know what to say to the judge when the judge asked him a question. The judge sentenced my father first, gave him 5 years, right in the same court at the same time. So now my brother comes up to be sentenced. My brother is called Emmanuel at the time. Now his name is Ayman. He changed his name to Ayman. Emmanuel came up, and the judge said, "What is your position regarding this? Do you accept to be drafted?" My brother told the judge, "Whatever my father said to you, that's what I say to you." And the judge said, "What I gave your father, that's what I give you." This is true. This is no joke. This is exactly what happened. So my brother got 5 years, too. gave both of them 5 years. But while my father was in prison, he had plenty of time to think about his work and think about the times, the changing times, because already America had changed quite a bit from 1931 to 1941. America had changed quite a bit. And my father was in prison until 1945. So he's thinking all those years, and he's seeing change. He's seeing the war come to an end. He's seeing how the war is going to turn out, coming to an end. So he's thinking about a lot of things, and he's planning to begin his work afresh when he's released. So he decided while he was in prison that when he returned, he wrote my mother and told my mother, gave my mother indications of what his change, what the change was going to be, and it was a change from concentrating on the teachings of Mr. Farrar to engaging in business, opening up businesses. He came to the belief that until the Muslims in America made a material showing, they wouldn't impress the rest of the African Americans, especially the better educated and better off financially among us. So he said to, and he needed them. He realized he needed them. He said, we need better educated people, and we need people who can make money, do business and make money and hire people and produce wealth. So he decided he was going to change the emphasis from religion to a business. And that's what he did. He took the emphasis from religion to and put it on business. And Malcolm X, called Malcolm X back then, Al-Hajj Malik Shabazz, Malcolm X, he came in 49. He joined the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in 1949. In 1949, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was already having the emphasis on business, more so than on esoteric or secret teachings of very complicated scriptural language, symbolic language. So Malcolm, he wasn't burdened with that burden that most of us carried. I carried as a boy. I remember carrying that kind of teaching on my mind. He wasn't burdened with that. When Malcolm came, Malcolm saw practical things. He saw the Honorable Elijah Muhammad representing an alternative. If white America didn't want to integrate blacks, then let blacks separate to themselves and let us have an independent state of our own. So Malcolm saw that as a practical alternative. And Malcolm also saw business as good sense. And he had a business spirit himself. So he came in and with his energies, the man had energies plus. He came in with all of his energies and his skill, his organization skill. He came in and he gave the Honorable Elijah Muhammad great help. And in no time, the membership began to increase by tens and twenties and then by hundreds. And pretty soon, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was on 60-minute, what do they call it? Yeah, 60 minutes. Yeah, CBS, I think it was. Yeah, 60 minutes. 60 minutes news with Mike Wallace. Mike Wallace, that's who I was trying to think of, the reporter, Mike Wallace. The Nation of Islam was on that news, on the news. Everybody, for everybody to see. All America, all the American people for the first time now. They see this strange and different following of African Americans or blacks on 60 Minute News, Mike Wallace. after that, you know what happened. You pretty well know what happened after that, I'm sure. Most of you know what happened after that. The Nation of Islam became like one writer say, the gadfly, annoying, an annoyance. An irritation in America, in the life of America, or on the back of America, a kind of a scare tactic, saying, "Well, if you don't let Martin Luther King have what he wants you to give blacks, then look what we're asking. look what the other extreme is asking. You see." So that went on for a long time, as you know. Until Malcolm's assassination. Malcolm's assassination was brought on by what I call a healthy competition lost and an unhealthy rivalry came in to the Nation of Islam among the official staff. We used to have a healthy competition. We didn't compete with each other for any reason but to advance the whole, to see the whole better. We loved each other, we were friends, but something happened. When the emphasis changed from religion to business, something happened, something was lost of our spiritual life, and we became ugly rivals of each other. The national staff in Chicago began to plot against Malcolm, who was based in New York, to undermine him, to discredit him, so that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad would see them as being his better his better supporters, so that Malcolm would lose a lot of freedom and a lot of authority as spokesman for the Nation of Islam. So this undermining of Malcolm started coming out of the Chicago-based staff, the national staff in Chicago. Malcolm getting nervous and feeling that there was a plan to just get rid of him, he began to take risks. He began to suspect the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, his teacher, the man that he loved, the man that he worked for so faithfully. He began to suspect him that Honorable Elijah Muhammad himself wanted Malcolm out of the way. I wanted Malcolm to be stripped of a lot of power and authority. But it was Honorable Elijah Muhammad who gave him all the power and authority he had. He got it from Honorable Elijah Muhammad. But this thing was working, this jealousy, and it was working. So Honorable Elijah Muhammad, in time, he was affected by what the Chicago-based staff was saying against Malcolm. Some of that stuff penetrated the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He believed a little bit of it. Just enough to make Malcolm suspect him. And Malcolm, in turn, started to believe some things that he was hearing, that liars were saying against Honorable Elijah Muhammad. So these two people who really loved each other and met each other and loved each other and embraced each other like father and son, now they're enemies. They become enemies. And we know what happened. Malcolm was finally assassinated by a person who said he was a FOI, a member of the Fruit of Islam, of the Temple of Islam. Assassinated. More than one person was involved, but the one person who really fired the shots that killed Malcolm, he admitted that he was the one who did it, and he was a member of the FOI, the Fruit of Islam. This is not excusing the intelligence department, U.S. intelligence department. That's not excusing them. But the actual thing that happened, it happened as I just told you it happened. But whether intelligence department had people in the national staff at Chicago instigating this thing and working to bring about this kind of division, we don't know for sure. But there's enough to suspect that that's what happened, that the intelligence department had people planted in the national staff to bring about the split between Honorable Elijah Muhammad and his spokesman, Malcolm. So much for that. But the point is not to tell you about that, what happened, or to explain to you or try to put some light on what caused Malcolm's assassination. The point is just to say that that signaled another big change for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. When that happened, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad felt, now understand too, that all the time, black situation in America is getting better in terms of the law, justice, etc. It's getting better all the time. So Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he's not in an America now that has a Jim Crow law, one law for blacks and one law for whites. He's not in an America now that says, blacks, stay in your place, stay in your place. He's in an America now that says, we must include the blacks. We must bring the blacks to have the same respect under the law and treatment under the law that all other whites and all other citizens have. So he's living in a greatly changed America. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad himself is living in a greatly changed America, and he himself now has lived many years and read many newspapers and heard many things and have met Muslims from the Muslim Student Association of the United States and Canada, educated students, some with master degrees and doctor degrees, came to his house and talked to him. So he's learning for the first time what the world of Islam looks like, really. So he began to change his emphasis again from black, emphasizing black, separation for blacks, and black man being important and God and all that. He changed that emphasis, and even separate states, he changed, and he began to emphasize what? Respect for all people. This is what he preached in the last major address he gave at his national convention. He preached respect for the white man, respect for all people. He said, if the white man can accept you and treat you right, then you respect him and treat him right. This is the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He made a strong appeal to him. In fact, in his own words, he said, I'm saying this from the bottom of my heart. So he was letting us know that that was something that he was really very serious about, having us understand and accept and live it out, that we don't disrespect anybody who's not disrespecting us, and that we stop looking at the white man as we were looking at the white man and start looking at the white man as a human being and realize that white people are respecting you, so you should respect them. So this was a strong appeal along Elijah Muhammad, a great change he brought about. And at that same time, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was permitting me, his son, who had returned to the Nation of Islam. He put me out, I returned. He put me out again, I returned, with his permission all the time. Can't return without his permission. So here I am now. I'm having a different mind, and I'm teaching a different language. My language doesn't sound like the language of his ministers. But I'm inside the Nation of Islam now. He has let me back in. So they brought him a tape. They say, we want you to hear what he's saying. So he heard it, and he liked it. He liked it because it was different. It wasn't threatening him, and it wasn't really identifying me with Muslims of the world or with Christianity or anything. What I was talking on, the topic that I got up that made it easy for me to be put myself in a situation where I could do something and not be condemned for it. I thought my father would accept me in that position or in that kind of mind. My topic on the radio was, you know, a radio interview, mythological gods, the burden on America. That was my talk. And actually, the Nation of Islam also had its mythological gods. I didn't say the Nation of Islam. I said America, mythological gods, the burden on America. And actually, I saw that. You know, most Americans, when we think about God, we perhaps think about the personal God. But if someone asks us, how does God look? Most Americans, Christians, will right away see the image of Jesus as they have been given it. A man on a cross. That's what they will see right away. They will see a man. If people would say, how does God look? You see a man, most of you. And to me, that's the mythological picture. That's not the real picture. That man on the cross, that's a mythological picture. It's not a real picture. It can never be a real picture for me. Because I know my physical body is not the real picture of Wallace D. Muhammad. The real picture of Wallace D. Muhammad is not this physical body. It's the person in this body. And you can't see that person with physical eyes. Yes. So that physical picture of Jesus Christ could never be the real true picture for me, you see? So I saw all of these images. According to the Bible, these images are wrong. The Old Testament says, make no image of God. In the heavens or in the earth, make no image. You see? I'm speaking for myself now. I'm not speaking for Christians. I'm speaking for myself. I saw these things, all of these pictures of God that we have in our minds as mythological pictures, mythological deities. And that's what I was discussing on the radio. So when my father heard it, he liked it so much. He was sickly. He was weak. They used to have to help him get up from his seat. When he finished dinner, the brother would come and help him up. But he jumped up from his seat. They thought they had me on trial again. They did not. They played the tape. My father heard it. And at one point when I was speaking, he jumped up from his seat and he stood up and he clapped. He cheered. He missed the point I made on the tape. And he looked at my mother. My mother was down the end. And normally she would be there on Sunday when the staff, when officials there were there, she would be there. He looked down to her and he said, Clara, said, isn't that what we wanted? And she smiled and she said, yes. And they were happy. Wasn't too many years after that my father passed. But I lived to see him approve my language and smile. In fact, he told his staff at that point, he said, my son can go anywhere he wants. He was telling them because they had the power. He had given them the power to restrict my movements. They could say, no, you can't go to Temple Number 7. You can't go to New York City to this. They could do it. They could tell the minister there, don't invite him. No, you can't invite Imam Wallace Muhammad to speak in New York today. They could tell him that. So my father said to his staff, his national staff, he said, my son can go anywhere he wants and preach. Then he looked at me. He said, and son, preach that gospel. Now, I don't know what he's talking about, that gospel, but that's what he said. He said, and son, preach that gospel. Because really that talk on mythological deities as the burden on America was not gospel, and it certainly wasn't my gospel. But he said, and preach that gospel. Well, that was his way of talking. He used language like that. He wasn't being so very serious. What he meant, preach the way I was preaching. He was approving the way I was preaching, that I continued to preach the way I was preaching. Anyway, I went from big temple to big temple, doing just that, preaching a new language. When the Honorable Elijah Muhammad passed, I saw him a few days, 2 days before he passed. And actually, he looked so good. He sat on the side of the bed. He looked so good, I thought he was going to be speaking on the 26th of February. He said, he was telling us what to do if we on the Savior's Day when we go out. So I said, oh, Daddy, I said, you'll be there. And I was smiling, I really meant it, because he looked like, I've seen him recover, snap back from being very sick and go out and do what he had to do. So I actually thought he would be ready, in good shape, to give his on Savior's Day address, his annual address. But he wasn't. He had passed the day before, and we gave it. From that time on, the Nation of Islam was never the same, never the same, and it's not the same. Even though Farrakhan represents the Nation of Islam now, and he has a following, a substantial following, that identify with the Nation of Islam, the Nation of Islam is not the same, and it will never be the same again. What I did was bring to the people the importance of the Quran for Farad, for Mr. Farad, and all of Elijah Muhammad, and that book had purposely been held back from us. And now that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has gone, this is the time to bring that book close to us and to follow the only authority that's left. I said, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is gone. He's not here as an authority anymore. So the only authority we got left is the book that he respected and taught us to respect, the Quran. Thank you.